The Bloomington City Council has decided to take the next step toward possibly allowing cannabis sales once statewide legalization goes into effect January 1st. Council members voted Monday evening to send the cannabis discussion over to the Planning Commission to get more feedback at a public hearing next month. They could get into specifics about where exactly a cannabis dispensary could be located in Bloomington if someone wants to do that. Here in studio with WGLT's Ryan Denham to discuss where things stand is Ward 4 City Council member Julie Emick. She served on the city's cannabis task force.
And a lot of our work was gathering as much research and data as possible, but that process was never meant to circumvent a larger community process. So what I'm glad about in terms of what the Planning Commission can do for us is take it to that next level. There will be opportunity for more input from the community. People can weigh in on what this might look like should the city determine that we are not going to opt out. And it's time to hear a more diverse set of voices now.
Who still needs to chime in on this? It feels like we've been talking about cannabis a lot over the last year. What are those voices that you think are maybe still haven't been heard?
Well, I think that this will allow for residents to show up and say, hey, this is what I think. We have had public comment in the city council, but this is a specific meeting that is focused on the question of zoning, and it provides residents more opportunity to make comments. I also understand that Alderman Black has requested we get something in writing from community organizations that we can consider as we continue to deliberate over the next couple of months, November and December, and specifically to hear from the public schools, to hear from Wesleyan, to hear from community associations, perhaps neighborhood associations. I'm sure that's just the beginning, but it might be helpful to have something that isn't just a conversation at the coffee shop or even a random conversation that one of the task force members had in the nature of our work, but something a little more formalized so that we can have a record of input.
So what did you think of sort of the draft version of an ordinance, of a zoning ordinance that City Attorney Jeff Juergens presented last night? This is the one that's based off of the Illinois Municipal League's kind of model ordinance.
Yes.
It states things like, cannabis businesses would require special use permits, they'd be prohibited from locating within 500 feet of schools, churches, playgrounds, can't be too close to residential areas, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that sort of draft, that model ordinance is a starting point?
I think it's a really good starting point. I think it provides a way to think about what this would actually look like. And I went to the IML conference in Chicago recently, and there were many sessions about this topic, as you can imagine. All of the sessions were standing room only. And a lot of what was suggested from a legal perspective, as well as just talking with other municipalities about how they were engaged in this conversation, was reflected in that draft plan that Jeff Juergens presented last night. I think that he is trying also to create the special use permit as to give us as much flexibility as possible locally, so that if someone is in violation of anything on that permit, we can take action. I know that the process for doing so is going to be different. Of course, this whole thing is different, but I maintain that it doesn't mean we should wait and see. I think we need to be more proactive, and as we're working towards a resolution that will work for this community, we are better positioned to make decisions by just trying something, you know. Let's make sure that we make it as safe and reasonable as possible. But I think the best way to figure that out is to do something engage in the process.
Let's take one step back. So you are one of two council members who served on this cannabis task force.
Yes.
That you mentioned. You did a lot of research, had a lot of meetings in a very short amount of time.
Yes.
Really a matter of weeks almost, or about a month. Do you think that group had enough time, had enough runway to work with? Would a few more weeks or another month been helpful?
It may have been helpful in that we could have garnered more of that formalized input that I referred to earlier. But on the other hand, when I think about the difference from the first meeting to the third meeting, and in the beginning there was so much conversation from task force members about how they, while they came with expertise, you know, law enforcement or addiction specialist, business owner, they didn't necessarily know a lot about the legislation. And then in those 3 weeks, everyone kind of just dug in and really got as much information as possible so that in our second and third meetings, we could really have some substantive discussion about what it was we were finding and what we would recommend. For me, the task force was primarily about getting the ball rolling, getting more data, more information back to council, back to the community. And I think it succeeded in doing that.
And Councilmember Kim Bray said the recommendations which came out of the task force, at least opening the door for a cannabis dispensary in Bloomington, she called them predictable recommendations because no school administrators or attorneys were named to the panel. What did you think of her criticism of the makeup of that body?
Yeah, I certainly didn't know where we would end up at the end of those 3 weeks, and I think that it wasn't unanimous. There was a lot of conversation about, for example, the impact on policing came up, and I don't know if predictable is the right way to frame it. I think it was rather just a deliberate process of reviewing as much information as we could and coming up with the best recommendation possible.
This work with the Cannabis Task Force, you're swimming in articles and research and data from states that have legalized and already kind of gone through this process. What are those things that should be instructive to the way that Bloomington thinks about this issue?
That's a really interesting question, because Illinois is the first state that has legalized cannabis from the legislature. So I know when Senator Steens talked about this legislation, one of the co-authors of the bill, she said that what they really tried to do was study what other states had done and learn from their mistakes. So when I read, for example, the Colorado Division of Criminal Justice report, which I think is one of the most even-handed reports I've read just in terms of presenting data, there are sort of indicators that if we, you know, pursue having a business, what the state has done that's different is to highly regulate how these businesses are rolling out. So, for example, they're only allowing a certain number of licenses to be granted statewide, and that's a very careful calculation. And of course, the state is also targeting communities and residents who have been adversely affected by cannabis criminalization. So that is a key feature of this process. And I think that alone from the get-go is setting us out to be somewhat unique. The other thing is that there was a lot of concern in communities that if recreational cannabis were legal, that there would be a higher increase in youth. And the data from Colorado and Washington suggests that hasn't really borne out based on the analyses that they've done.
Youth using,
and they attribute that to sort of a less black market availability, but and more importantly, perhaps overt discussion and education, because it's out there, and this is a mechanism for having conversations about kids making responsible choices and why that matters. And I think that the idea behind earmarking certain tax revenue for those kinds of social programs for education would be really something that Bloomington should consider if we decide as a council to allow cannabis business in our community.
So after all that, all the research that the task force has done, presuming that the zoning stuff can be sorted out, right, that it's going to go through the planning commission, it's going to come back to council, do you personally, Julie Emig, a council member from Ward 4, think the city should allow sales?
I do. I think the city should allow sales. The first reason why is because the state has made it legal. a lot of the concerns we have are going to be the result of the fact that cannabis use, recreational cannabis use, is now legal for adults 21 and older. So it seems to me that it's our responsibility to create a safe and reasonable opportunity for people to engage in legal activity. You know, I'm impressed with the incredible amount of care that the state has required anyone who's getting a license to dispense, to market, that they have to follow the security guidelines, the packaging guidelines, the advertising guidelines. I think that creates just a safer and more viable market for us.
What are your initial thoughts on, you know, cannabis cafes, or basically a business where you would not only be able to sell cannabis, but people would be able to use on site, on the premises? Where's your head at there?
Well, I would say the majority of the constituents in Ward 4 who've reached out to me, certainly not all of them, but the majority of them are in favor of having cannabis market in this community. However, the majority of them are not in favor of having cannabis cafes. And I think that in that case, perhaps we should slow down and just, you know, see how we can progress. If we allow the sale of this legal product and not sort of go out of the gate with the cannabis cafes in conjunction with that, I think it's a big enough step and a big enough paradigm shift, to use one of the task force's terms, that offering that in addition would, at this point, would be harder for more people to get their heads around.
What are your thoughts on sort of the right tax rate for this? I think municipalities are able to tack on up to 3% on top to pull in revenue. Where do you think the city should be at with that? And if the city does go that route, where should that money go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another really interesting question. Senator Steens has this municipal toolkit for communities going through this, and she actually recommended that perhaps municipalities not jump right away to the highest tax rate, that it be more incremental, that, you know, what you don't want to do is create an opportunity for cannabis to be so expensive that there's, you know, this underground black market. And that has been a concern, a legitimate concern that we have to control for and watch for. Certainly the state has to be responsible for that. So I would urge yes, we need revenue from this, because we need it to support the safety concerns and the social services and the public concerns that people have around education. But we also need to be careful about how much we tax and when.
If the city does pull in additional revenue off of cannabis sales, where that money should go? Should it be earmarked in a certain way? Just kind of go into the general pot? What are you thinking?
I think it should be earmarked. I think that there should be, and we should be very transparent about that on council, that we will use the revenue generated, whether it's to for addiction services or educational programming in our schools, or if we decide that, you know, we need to get more of the police officers trained sort of in the how you detect on the road, for example, when you pull somebody over. There aren't any bona fide tests, although they're working on that, but there are ways of assessing. However, that work is going to happen regardless, because cannabis is becoming legal statewide, but there might be an opportunity to generate some of that revenue and funnel it for public safety.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Bloomington City Council member Julie Emig, who represents Ward 4. Her ward includes parts of downtown and all those areas immediately east of downtown, including several historic neighborhoods. So Julie, another action last night, the council approved hiring a Chicago-based consultant, the Lakota Group, for $50,000 to guide the development of a new community preservation plan. The city's last preservation plan was, I think, updated back in 2004, so it's been quite a while. So what is this all about? What is this plan going to entail?
I'm really excited about this plan because I know our historic preservation plan is very dusty. And while it will inform the creation of a new one, we really need a new one. And I was very impressed with the Lakota Group's proposal for a couple of reasons. First, they really have a strong mechanism for community input and outreach. They also are truly taking into account how to leverage historic preservation for an economic driver. And that's critically important. And in connection to our comprehensive plan. And finally, they not only plan, but they strategize with the city and staff and community about how to implement. So those factors really I found to be persuasive. Most of it is going to be paid for via grant funding, and I know all grant funding is still taxpayer dollars, but it's earmarked for this, so why not bring it back into our community in the way that it's earmarked? And I think that that's certainly for residents in Ward 4, but truly for the whole city, this is going to be a really exciting process and will give us a way to move forward. And I think that a lot of folks are frustrated in our community that we do a lot of planning and not enough action. So I'd really like to see this plan do both.
What are those things in Ward 4 that are, you know, maybe unique, you know, those historic characteristics that would potentially benefit from having a better handle on our preservation planning?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I mean, everything from kind of what we can do with Franklin Park, you know, and create a better vision for that space, to finding ways for individual homeowners that you can get coded as a historical site, which allows you to have access to funds to improve your residence. And I think that can also happen for businesses downtown and for businesses in the community that have this historical character. And we can find ways to, for example, what Leah Klein referred to last night when she talked about this, we can find ways to tie in the Route 66 work that we're doing. That's not just my ward. That's a lot of different parts of the community. But it's a very targeted way of thinking about how historic preservation can actually lift this community economically as well as just aesthetically.
That's Bloomington City Councilmember Julie Emig, who represents Ward 4. Julie, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you, Ryan.
I'm Ryan Dent.
According to a timeline provided by the Lakota Group, the preservation plan process will begin next month and include several forums for community input. The plan is scheduled to be done August 2020.